in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust and blues you can trust. Indigos feel and white ones heal. Yellow scare and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Marge face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 557.
That's right. We're talking about Green Lantern War Journal number 8, brought to you by writer Philip Kennedy Johnson with artist Montos, colorist Adriana Lucas, letterer Dave Sharp, variant cover artist Raza Montos and Adriana Lucas, assistant editor Jillian Grant, and editor Paul Kaminsky. So just jumping right into it, we open up in Baltimore where Shepard is wandering a kind of derelict or abandoned apartment complex, or just at least underlooked after by the landlord. And it is Guy Gardner's last known address, and he is trying to ring the doorbell to get in. And he's suddenly taken inside and faced down by a ton of various constructs with various guns aimed at him, as well as a camera. And Guy talking to him, saying that he's not home. When Shepard says, "Hey, you know, you're one of my greatest teachers. You don't sound like much like the Guy Gardner I knew." Guy says, "The Gardner, you're that Shepard guy, one of those multiverse guys. I hate you guys." So I guess somehow off-panel, Guy has been told about Shepard. He's saying, "Hey, John's missing. He told me that he trusts you. I need your help." And Guy's talking about how he's off world, and he's talking about the blockade around Sector 2814. Obviously, we know what Guy's up to as per the last major Green Lantern issue in the backup there with Lobo. Meanwhile, over in Dark Star of the Fen, where we last left John in this weird nether space, the local residents there are getting attacked, and one of their leaders, or if not their leader, period, says to go for cover and barricade the tunnels, but she gets taken and is about to be killed when John joins the fight with a bunch of construct weaponry. He recognizes that these individuals are not necessarily radiant dead, but they state that they are part of Ulgrun themselves. And John then powers up, goes super mech crazy, and blasts all of them away. And they disappear and say, "You know, you've got a short reprieve. We'll be back," essentially.
That old inevitable line that we're kind of sick of at this point. thank you, Thanos.
apparently in that conversation, he was referred to as the Builder, which these people below have heard, which, by the way, I didn't realize this until just now, but I guess John covered the entire populace of these people under a dome while he fought them. But they heard that he is the Builder, and they start like, "Hey, our time has come. We will escape." And he's like, "Nah, I'm not your god, but I can help you. But just tell me what's going on here." Meanwhile, over in Metropolis on Steelworks, we see Ellie Rose being read a bedtime story by her mother. She gets tucked in. She asks for another story. She leaves. And then as her mother is sitting down for the night, she hears her name called, and it is Varen taking the form of Henry, who is her ex-husband. She's like, "Wait, you don't live here anymore." And he's like, "Oh, they got you all turned around, surely. You know, and that girl isn't real. Let me in," so on and so forth. And then Ellie comes out, says she can't sleep, and asks her to lie down with her. She puts her mother to bed, tells her it was just a bad dream, and then communicates, I guess, out, "Shirley Stewart is in danger. Secure the perimeter. Radiant dead Lantern named Varen is here, and the entire construct house is surrounded by construct troops to guard them. She also says, hey, alerting Steelworks, do not let anything approach the residence. And she, you know, a message, come home, John. Meanwhile, back at, I don't know, Resistance HQ over here in the Darkstar land, the woman from earlier introduces herself to John as Enshi. She's a science officer. Basically, everybody who's here got dragged into a gravity well and stuck here. This place exists outside space-time because they've been here for a long time, but they don't know exactly how long. But nobody gets hungry, and there has to be an atmosphere, but their instruments can't detect it. The Fen, who are the kind of primitive-looking people who pray to the star or whatever, say, you know, they're going to be called up to the Dark Star someday. This Dark Star flashes with energy and sound, and John realizes it's getting bigger. The people come up to him again. Says, you're the builder. You can destroy it. Yeah. He's like, look, I can use my ring to arm you, shield you, boost your numbers, but I don't know how to close the breach. So he starts talking about possible means of escape. And then the weird guy from the previous issue, who gets a name by Lavok, talks about the gravity storm that surrounds the place. And it's there to keep a creature contained. And I guess he brought the gravity storm itself. And if I die, you'll all be free. Yeah, but the horrors of the Dark Star will be free also. If you want to get help, get home, help me find a way to destroy the Dark Star, or there won't be a home for anyone. Meanwhile, back over in Baltimore, in the back of Guy Gardner's bedroom, in the back of the closet, Shepard is picking his way through some dirty shoes and probably crusty socks. And he says, you know, I really would appreciate you keeping this a secret from the rest of the Corps. Don't tell anybody I have this. And he's like, whoa, you have this in the back of your closet? He's like, hey, look, if you want answers, this is where you're going to get it, because the Book of Oa has got the answers. And apparently the title for our next issue is The Answers. So, yes, the Book of Oa has been stashed in the back of Guy Gardner's abandoned apartment. So
we better hope those are socks. I gotta be honest with you, I don't, this, that was not really my interpretation, especially the one that's hanging on the Book of Oa. That looks more like underwear, but hey. Well, I guess if we're gonna try to be positive, this wasn't as bad as the last issue.
Yeah, because the last issue didn't really give us anything.
No, the last issue was really bad. I mean, even the issue that pretty much arguably killed all the momentum in the series with that horrible reveal, that issue wasn't bad until we got the reveal. But then, you had, like we talked about, you had the chance to do something to – it's like, okay, regardless of where – if you thought that reveal was going to work, not work, you got to do something, get some positive momentum storytelling-wise, go forward – make it a good issue, and they didn't. It was bad. So this issue is functionally much better. To me, however, I guess the negative is this gives me Future State vibes, because I think everything other than the John Stewart stuff is much more interesting in this book. I think the Shepard and Guy stuff is interesting, even though Shepard doesn't get a whole lot of page time, but Shepard seems to always make the most out of the page time that he gets as a character. That's kind of cool. And the stuff with Ellie Rose and the radiant dead and all that stuff, Varen, that stuff was interesting. The stuff with John was a little bit interesting, but I think, as we will discuss, knowing what the future holds for this book, as far as not just when it ends, but the solicits that we've already gotten, it kind of makes it harder to get too excited about what's coming next.
Yeah, I still like the art, but I will say, there were moments I thought it looked strange, mostly kind of centered around Shepard for some reason. So the very first page we get when Shepard gets pulled in, yeah, he's got a face of surprise and shock and everything, but his face still looks weird. Doesn't look too weird when he's talking to the camera. And I'm just sort of tabbing through just super quick here. because he does look weird again later on. Okay, yeah, when obviously, like, he's sticking out his tongue and showing disgust and holding his nose, but every time we see his eyes in this last page here, he looks just so strange. But I mean, there's still lots of good art and detail here in the various costumes and tattered clothing of these people who are stuck in this Dark Star land. Lots of machinery, alien designs. The constructs are super intricate. Look at all the line work on those construct soldiers, and the shadowing, the shading and shadows and cross hatching and various stuff that's done in there. Lots of detail on all the other constructs as well, when John goes like super mech and stuff like that. So that was cool. I will say also, I don't know if you know this, because I know you don't pay attention too much to the variant covers. You know, our title page where John enters the scene with all of those weapons on that first page, and it says Star and Shroud, and yeah. We get our, okay, remove the Star and Shroud and creative teams, remove the letter bubbles. This page was a variant cover. They just took the page, inked and colored without the lettering, and made it a variant cover.
Now that's interesting.
It's interesting. I don't know the thought behind it, but it says lazy to me. Not that we need, I don't understand why we have so many variant covers, this is just a small minor thing. I'm not trying to take us off track here, but it's relevant. Over on our Twitter account for the past couple of weeks, I've been running polls breaking down all of the covers for the main Green Lantern series from issue 1 all the way up to issue 12. We have completed all of those polls up through issue 11, because as of right now, the Doc Shaner variant cover for issue 12 has yet to be revealed. And I won't be continuing the polls after that. But the reason I mention that is because in order to run a poll on Twitter, your maximum allowed choices are 4. You can have up to 4. Same with images you upload. You can upload up to 4 images. Well, it didn't happen until like issue 7, I want to say, of Green Lantern, the main series, that I didn't have to run multiple polls per one issue, because there were like 7 or 8 different variants. DC is going too crazy on the variants.
Yeah, they are. It's a ridiculous trend, because they're clearly, what they really want to do is they're hoping for, not when it comes to covers, I mean, because you're not like this with covers, you're more like this with other stuff, but they're hoping for completists like you, Chad. Yeah. It's like, oh, I have to get every cover of every issue. Or if you start with the first, if they had two covers or 3 covers of the first 4 issues and you got them, it's like, oh, now we got your hook. So now we'll keep increasing the number of covers. And those, quote unquote, there's always like the OCD people. It's like, oh, my collection won't be complete like I started it if I don't get every single cover.
Yeah, there have been 1 or 2 variants of War Journal I've liked, but I didn't buy the variant. I'm only buying the regular covers for this series. Now, with Green Lantern, there have been a lot of variants I really like, but what I will do is pick out my absolute favorite, and that will be the copy I purchase. I do not get a regular and then a variant. I get my one copy I buy for myself is whatever my favorite variant is. Now, sometimes that'll be an upcharge because it's a 1 in 25 or a 1 in 50 or something, and I'm just like, okay, do I really want to spend the money or not? And then I make my decision from there. But I do not buy every cover. Mm-hmm. There have been series I've done that with, but regardless, I just said it, it's by series I make those decisions. And I don't think for DC or Marvel I've done a buy all the variants situation for a very, 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 very long time, because I've done it for a couple of series like, I already forget the name, the freaking The Many Deaths of Layla Starr. That was like a 4-issue series from Image or Boom or whatever. And I got all of those. It was a Ram V's thing. And I got all of the variants for every issue. But that's like a 4-issue series, so who cares? So but DC, man, you got to lighten up on the variants. The fact that they took this page that was already there and goes, we'll make that a variant too, just tells you that it's like, did you need to do that? Really? I don't think you did. All right. Sorry. I didn't mean to take us too off.
No, you didn't. Well, No, you didn't. And besides, I don't know how much we're going to delve into real content with this issue anyway, ultimately. I don't. Yeah, I think I've been on the record before repeatedly stating that I'm not a fan of the increasingly, or just in general, I'm not a fan of a variant cover upon variant cover. And oh, even when it's a number one issue, it's like, oh, we have to have 8 variant covers. And it's like, yeah, you're just counting on people buying more than one. That's what you're in. Yeah. And
like the first issue of Green Lantern, right? Didn't it have a variant for every symbol of the core, of all the cores, and then
oh, you're right. At least that one, like that one shop or whatever. You're right. That's not shocking that they do stuff like that. But yeah. So when it comes to this, I think part of what I'm trying to gather my thoughts here. I guess essentially, and this was my vibe, and nothing's changed it. Once we got that bad, horrible Olgren reveal, that pretty much took me out of this book. It wasn't. Now, I'm not saying that it was, in using the magic word of the issue, inevitable that I could never be brought back in at least a little bit. I think the issue after that, sealed my interest in this book, because that was such a bad issue. It's not because it's quote unquote written poorly. It's just the content was not good and the pacing wasn't good. And it was like a thud of an issue after a thud of a reveal. And when we talk about sales, and you know, then we will get to that too. I think that I'm pretty much checked out of this book. And the fact that we already know, looking ahead with the solicits, that John's still going to be stuck in this place as we head into the final issue. That really lessens my enthusiasm for reading issues 9, 10, and 11, knowing when issue 12 begins, he's in the same friggin' place. We assume he'll be out by the end of issue 12, since the book ends with issue 12. That's the other thing that. But between the double whammy of knowing this book now is officially, you know, done. Did Kennedy Johnson announce it himself?
The ending of the series?
Yeah, because I thought it was him announcing it, only because of the fact because there was something along the lines that he was never going to be writing, that it made it clear that I was never going to be able to write this book like for a long term or indefinitely or whatever. Either way, I mean, this book from a sales perspective had been kind of like dead book walking for a while, no matter, even without talking what we'll talk about soon, that. It may have also been a saving face maneuver too, that this, even though I don't trust DC editorial currently to make decisions based on the things you would think would determine whether a book lives or whether a book dies and who gets a book and who doesn't. But the book would have been justified getting the plug pulled on it, regardless of whether he only had like about a year before he wanted to move on to something else or was committed to doing something else. Either way, I think all these combined to the fact that for me, yeah, I'm just kind of like waiting for this to end at this point. It's not because there's nothing enjoyable in it. I'm interested in what Shepard's going to find. I'm interested in the Ellie Rose stuff too. But again, a lot of the stuff, as you talked about last episode, a lot of the stuff, because of these stupid solicits, we already know a lot of things that are coming that kind of have borderline arguably ruined some of the interest or suspense. And like I said, the fact that we already know that he's stuck in this universe into the final issue of the series. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to make the next couple of issues overly compelling to me, as they seem. It seems like they'll be milking it a little bit about what's going on in the Dark Star universe or dimension or wherever they are.
Yeah, I sent you a link in our chat here on our recorded call. This is a dc.fandom.com. Profile on a character known as Byla Esh, who appeared during the War World saga and also appeared in Action Comics 2002 or 2001 annual, which I don't think we ever covered it on the show, because we remember when we talked about the House of L, because we had that Blue Lantern Super. Yep. We got one other story featuring some of the House of L cast of characters, including the Blue Lantern L family member that we had, but she wasn't featured super prominently, so we never covered that issue on our show. We got close to it, but we never did. Byla is one of the storytellers that was telling stories of the characters in the House of L, and look at that character's design.
Yep.
That So why this character is named Byla Vok, we don't know, but most people are assuming that it's Byla Esh from the Warworld saga. Again, we don't know much about Warworld. Actually, guys, if you want, we're not going to talk about it here because we don't need to just repeat what Dan says. I just encourage you to go watch it yourself. Dan had a video recently talking about, what was it, War Journal 6, I think. That goes into the details very briefly, just for, you know, your own information, on what happened in the Warworld saga, so that you have it in your mind as you're reading this. It's his Green Lantern 7 review. As of recording, it's the most recent video posted to his channel. So if you're interested, go check it out. That's all I'll say about that. but Byla Vok, and even DC.fandom.com, if you go to the appearances of Byla Esh, they're counting these couple of issues, this issue and the last issue, of War Journal as an appearance of Byla Esh. So apparently, you know, people are already assuming this is the exact same guy. So more Warworld stuff that, you know, if you want to know, that's out there. So I talked about the art. I did enjoy it for the most part, except for, like I said, Shepherd's face in a couple of spots. Story-wise,
I think deep down, I think you do know. I think, see, this is...
I'll be honest with you, Mark. Like I feel it. I definitely feel it. I'm getting fatigued with it. It annoys me. It still has the potential for... And I'm not saying I'm going to go back and read the Warworld saga. I'm just saying I'm waiting for the whole thing to end so that I can be hindsight 2020 and going, okay, yeah, it ended. No, you know, it lost its momentum. It never regained its momentum, and it ended badly. I am waiting for more we still have 4 issues left. I'm waiting for more pieces to fall into place to see if the puzzle makes sense, or if it's just a shittily cut puzzle and I have like pieces from 6 different images. You know,
in all honesty, I don't think it has anything to do with necessarily a shitty cut puzzle. It's a poorly conceived puzzle conceptually. And this is my opinion, based on, you know, how, again, when people blindly say, hey, you just let the creators do what they want. Here's a beautiful example where editorial, I think, should have had some input on what was going on in the story conceptually, because this is a story, clearly, in all honesty, and we talked about this is a and I used the term before, and I'm more convinced of it now based on what we're saying. This is a very self-serving story. This is something that Philip Kennedy Johnson wrote before. Has really nothing to do with Green Lantern. He's continuing stuff that he wrote before, really, that would only have an appeal to people that, to a relatively small group of comic book readers that just follow Philip Kennedy Johnson everywhere. And based on the sales on this book, it is a relatively small percentage of people. It's not like, oh, it's not like a Morrison or a Geoff Johns in his prime, where it's like, hey, you could go from book to book and you know you're going to take a chunk of those people that are at least going to start your next endeavor with you, because they love you. They're such big fans of you.
Well, go ahead and get into it, man, because I'm done talking about specific issues.
But it's just the fact that all of this crap around Warworld, so this character, so we think this the creator of the Storm to protect everything, to basically keep this version or aspect of Ulgrin contained, is also tied to Warworld, and Ulgrin is tied to Warworld, and none of this stuff means, you know, it means jack shit to Green Lantern mythos and to Green Lantern fans. And this is where, if editorial wasn't the way they are, and I don't mean just these Green Lantern editorial, which we're not going to talk about today, though. Obviously, we have material we can with that based on certain things with our editor. But DC as a whole, and the post-DiDio regime, which I do think is mostly the inmates running the asylum right now, somebody should say, okay, what does this have to do with Green Lantern? And don't you think, posing the question, don't you think after that this will fall flat, because nobody who reads Green Lantern, in quotes, nobody, small n, is going to know or care about this stuff? This is just poorly conceived as far as how it's going to play. There's no real appeal to Green Lantern. If you're a Jon Stewart fan, to a certain extent, you might keep reading the book, because it's not a bad Jon Stewart character piece.
Nope.
But as far as the actual story being told.
Plot. Because we talked about this last time. Plot is pretty solid. Scripting and writing is doing great. Plot is not doing great.
Yeah. It's just, and when I said this, you know, the future state thing, it is, because to me, the Jon Stewart stuff right now, especially once you saw, it was different when he was in our universe. I mean, that really seemed to be a momentum killer too, sucking him out of our universe. And everybody who, at least who he was working with, relating to, talking to, that we had some kind of understanding of a relationship with, we could see the relationship, throwing him into a place that we know nothing about, characters that most Green Lantern fans are going to know, unless you read Werewolf, pretty much, you're not going to know anything about. And then all of a sudden, well, the stuff in our universe becomes inherently more interesting, partially by default, but just because I think there's more meat on the bone there. So as far as I think this book really nosedived, and it was destined to nosedive because that's where he wanted to go with this Olgrin thing, because it was something that he wanted to tell a story about or work it into here. And I don't get it. So I mean, it's just, and it also raises the question, which we can discuss more once this book ends, because eventually we know whether it's the end of this year or the beginning of next year, probably sometime next year, there'll be a second Green Lantern book launched again. I, for one, don't want to see another Jon Stewart book next, because we've already had two Jon Stewart books in the last three. Now, yes, you can blame it all you want on the writers. And again, this is where editorial comes in to a certain extent, even if it's choosing the wrong, quote unquote, wrong writer to tell. And Jon Stewart's been the main character in two Green Lantern books so far. And you can make a case which one is kind of disappointed more, because the Thorn book arguably is more disappointing, not just because of where he went, but because he had all the toys in the sandbox to play with, which we saw Robert do much better with when he had all the toys during the DC Rebirth book, the Hal and the Core book. So it's arguable which one's more disappointing. But no matter what, you've had two Jon Stewart-centric books that haven't sold. You can make a case Jon Stewart as a main character, has never really sold a book. The Green Lantern Core book, you know, sold fine under Tomasi, but Jon Stewart wasn't even the feature character in a lot of the stories a lot of the time. It was other lanterns there and other stories being told. But I'd think they should go pick another lantern. Now if you say, hey, it's gonna be Simon, then they'll say, yeah, go back with Jon. But if you go to the well one more time with Jon in a short period of time and it tanks again, then eventually, which nobody ever thinks about this, there will be a new regime in power at some point, and maybe sooner than you think if this editorial regime just keeps focusing on things that don't sell and don't work, and eventually WB says, hey, we need a change. That eventually, no matter what, there'll be a new regime, and it'll be hard-pressed to go back to Jon Stewart, and to even if it's a great idea. Maybe if you have a really great writer, they might convince you, somebody who does bring a lot of cachet. But it's going to be a real hard sell to give Jon Stewart another book anytime soon if you give him three books in 4 years and they all fail. So I think that's another thing we have to look at, start looking at the viability of Jon Stewart to put, you know, from a book selling perspective, asses in the seats, even though you can very easily, and I agree, blame it on the direction of the books and the writers that you chose to tell the story. But at the end of the day, it's still kind of like an albatross around the neck. So I hope if they do another Green Lantern book, that it's certainly not going to be a Jon Stewart-centric solo book, because with all the Green Lanterns we have, I think somebody else deserves a shot in the rotation.
Yeah, my final thoughts on the book are this issue, or rather. I agree with and empathize with Mark's frustration and stuff. And I think it's fair to say, look, guys, and I know in a lot of cases Mark agrees with me on most of what I'm about to say, but I'm just going to speak for myself, and so I don't toe that line too close. I was apprehensive going into the backups that we were getting for this Jon Stewart story. But I think the backups built a lot of goodwill. Montos did really well on the art. As we've said, even including this issue, a lot of scripting and writing is done very well. The intricacies of what's going on with Shirley Stewart's disease and how it's affecting her mind and the people around her, and how Jon is for better or worse, dealing with it or not dealing with it, or, you know, especially when you involve superpowers in that complex, already emotionally complex process, bringing Ellie Rose to life, quote unquote. You know, all of this is really intriguing, really interesting. The Shepherd stuff, despite being from another universe we only saw very, very briefly, you are starting to get more curious about Shepherd and his relationships. And yeah, like, you know, we didn't get to see all of that, but we kind of get little glimpses with based on things he says. So it was up until the reveal that we kind of just lost all steam for this. And I think it's fair to say, because I also don't want to be that person who's like, yeah, hey, I interviewed PKJ. I thought it was a good talk. You know, I want to be nice to the guy. It's not that. Like, I'm already being nice to the guy in what I'm saying. Scripting and the writing, the intricacies and everything that I just talked about, that's all on him. He's doing a great job with that and still is. It's just this piece of it is just utterly flopping the momentum of the series for me and my interest moving forward. And look, when DC gives a creative team a book and says go hog wild or whatever, that's on them. If the creative team is doing what they want to do, then okay, they made a choice, and it's up to you as the consumer whether or not you agree with that choice or want to stick around for that choice moving forward. And you can't start a Lantern book in the backups of another Lantern title to gain momentum for it, title it a Green Lantern book, release it as such, and then halfway through the actual series itself, drop a reveal that has nothing to do with the Lantern and everything to do with what you've done before, and not anticipate some severe drop off in your reader base. Like, it's one thing or not. Like, he easily could have, you know, known that going in and go, you know what? I'm telling the rest of my story. I'm prepared for that. I understand that. I even empathize with that. Some people are going to leave and that's fine, but I finally get to tell, you know, bookend my story, and that's what's important to me. Great, fine. That's totally valid. Whatever, do it. But you can't be mad at the people who are going to just say, you know what? I'm done, because it has nothing to do with the Lantern stuff that I signed on for in the beginning. So is it everybody's cup of tea? No. Am I even a proponent for some creators getting carte blanche to do what they want and things? Yes, I've said that before in the past, but just because I'm a proponent of it doesn't mean I am blind to the fact that when they do what they want, there's a potential there to lose your reader base and therefore end the series early. And I don't know. I don't know if you want to talk about the numbers or whatever, but
before we get to the numbers.
Yeah.
Everything you just said, I agree with too. When we heard about the backup story and the solicits of what it was going to be about, I honestly anticipated not liking it right off the bat. It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, this doesn't sound like it had, especially because in a way because I flipped through this book last night, by the way, which completely reminded me that the one shot, the World Without a Justice League one shot, had absolutely nothing to do with the payoff of Hal being sucked into the world, that we had to wait. to get the resolution to that, that I forgot how it disappointed me a second time, because I remembered how disappointed I was the first time that Hal Jordan doesn't factor into any of the events of that book. So that's the cliffhanger you get left on when he ends up in John's world. But knowing that it was being this backup story was being tied into that one shot, which I didn't like either, that was like, okay, I really anticipated I wasn't going to like it. But it's like you said, it started off well. But the reason why people, I think it was having momentum, was because you were anticipating that the destination was going to be worth the journey. And once we got that Olgrin reveal, it became clear that it wasn't. And then having a chance to at least give a really good issue to be as a palate cleanser, and following up with a really book that does absolutely nothing to move the plot forward at all. That I think the double whammy of that, I think the reveal will ultimately be the kiss of death for this book when we look back on it, you know, we do post-mortem. But they had a chance maybe to keep it alive on life support, but they blew that with the issue afterwards, which we'll talk about, the March issue. And I think that you're right, too, about Kennedy Johnson, that I'm pretty sure that ultimately that's what he wanted, that he really wanted to. He wanted to build on the story, that's this werewolf story. And that was more important to him than and maybe that's why he always knew he was never going to stay on the book long, because he probably knew that it was that the momentum and the interest in the book after he did this for Green Lantern fans would drop off. But at least he gets to finish his story. Let's talk sales.
All right.
So we had posed, I say we collectively had we pondered the question once we got to the February issue, which was the reveal issue, whether when the sales came in for the March issue, without even knowing, of course, at the time what the March issue was going to be like. But even more so interesting for us, I think, once we realized that the March issue was not good. The question was, basically, was the reveal and the thud that it landed with, was it likely to have a dramatic impact on sales for this book, which had up to that point still wasn't selling well, but it had risen 3 months in a row to creep to 108. It had moved up to 108, which also tells you how poorly the book had been selling, that it took 3 straight months of increases, December, January, February, to reach 108, that whether this thud would basically kill any kind of momentum this book had, even from a sales perspective, not just a narrative perspective. And the certainly the circumstantial evidence, being kind, would say yes. Oh yes, this book in March dropped from 108 down to 169. Putting it in perspective, this book sold worse than the Alan Scott book, and the Alan Scott book hasn't even been published on any kind of regular basis. And it's never had momentum, but what the Alan Scott was 162 in sales in March. War Journal went all the way down from 108 to 169. So it's really hard not to think that a lot of people checked out once we got that reveal that had nothing to do with Green Lantern. I mean, we could try to spin it a bunch of ways, but considering the book had risen 3 months in a row and then you dropped over 60 spots in 1 month, you have to think that the majority of that was because of the reveal issue, because I don't think you could get a small percentage of people that then were unhappy with that issue and flipped through the next issue and said, okay, no, I'm out. But it's kind of hard not to connect the dots there.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's definitely a factor. And that, I mean, it's exactly why I was talking about what I was talking about earlier with Philip Kennedy Johnson. There's projects that he's worked on that I love. Even this one, like I said, well written, scripted out, and so on and so forth. Even this issue, throughout all that stuff, there's some cool bits of dialogue and stuff like that in storytelling. It's just you're going somewhere I'm not interested in and can't follow. Yep. And that's a choice you made, and you're doing well at even telling that story. But I don't care about that story. And that's just the game you play when you're writing comic books. And from that conversation I had with him, from things I've seen him write in the past, there's no way, you know, it wasn't something that, even if he pushed it to the back of his mind or something, there's no way you didn't consider, you know, this is about to be a big reveal and it has absolutely nothing to do with lanterns, but you know what? I'm already writing Hulk and this and that, and I've got other projects on the line. I can't write this book forever. This is the situation that it's in. So am I going to tell a Lantern story, or am I going to take the opportunity to finish my War World saga or tie into it or reveal a little bit more and kind of expand the DC cosmos? And look, I want to say 100%. I'm behind, actually, the idea of tying in the DC universe to kind of a bigger collective whole. And, you know, when you make freaking Mongol go from a Superman villain to a Green Lantern villain or Cyborg Superman or whatever, that's cool shit to me. I like that. And I'm actually, look, there's a world out there. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, but there is a world out there where I could maybe, not right now, because I don't want to right now, I could maybe go back and read the War World saga and be like, you know what? That was actually really good. Now let me go reread War Journal. It makes more sense. Oh, this is actually very exciting. I like it more retroactively. Doesn't change my experience now.
No.
And as an example, Like, I've always wanted the idea of, what's her name? Sinestro Corps, Book of Fear, Lysa Drak. Lysa Drak, and I forget the name of the planet. Her species, her lineage is, was it Kalkos? Anyways, is from the same people and species that make up in the future one of my favorite Legionnaires, Shadowlass. I've always wanted a story connecting Lysa Drak to Shadowlass somehow. I like the idea of connecting these various parts of our DC cosmos. This is doing that, but I am lacking an entire piece of the puzzle, and therefore I honestly, is it fair to critique him for it? You guys at home can judge that all day long. All that matters is your experience reading it, and my experience reading it is lessened, and that's all I can tell you.
Yes, I mean, the reality is something that doesn't play well in 2024 as a whole, which is that you have the ability to make lots of choices and do lots of things and say lots of things, but there's also consequences for that. And consequences are frowned upon in modern society, but they still exist with rational people. So you make a choice, and he made the conscious choice. This is the story, and this is what I said, or what I said about this is where editorial should be doing something. Somebody should be stepping in and say, dude, the odds are this is going to land with a huge thud. Is there going to be anything coming that makes it more Green Lantern centric, or why the Green Lantern fans should care? When this is really the story you're telling, you're using a Green Lantern character, but it's really not a Green Lantern story. And you have a reveal. It's just not going to work. And conceptually, it was really never going to work. And honestly, being fair, I mean, Jeremy could very well end up in the same boat because we still don't know where entirely he's going with this. And there's tons of ways the story he's telling in that book can blow up big time. And we won't even talk about the sales of his book yet. We'll probably wait till we do that when we do the next Green Lantern monthly his book review. But it's not going. The spoiler alert is none of the books are selling particularly well. His book is selling the best. But his book has been kind of going up and down too. When it's in it, two of the last 3 months, it's not trending in the best direction either. So the reality is, it's not just a Philip Kennedy Johnson problem. But we saw this with Thorne too. Conceptually, what Thorne was doing was nuts because he was playing 3 years worth. He had a 3 year agenda, or three 1 year arcs that were all had to follow each other. And it's like he was never getting. Well, the odds of him getting 3 years on the book was remote to begin with. So to do that and then have to jam everything together to wrap it up in haphazard fashion, it's tough. And plus, I got to be honest with you, I didn't like, for whatever reason, and maybe this is where sales did come into play, where they did come into play, is the fact that I didn't like all we heard the talk, and we heard it from Jeremy about how, you know, he and Philip Kennedy Johnson were talking about basically talking and potentially planning of where their two books could cross over. And it's like, well, we know that's never going to happen. I mean, theoretically, it could, I guess, based on the very vague solicits for issue 12, we could have some bleed over with some characters from the Jeremy Adams run. But as far as having these books intertwine and telling the same story or cross over and have a typical crossover where one or two issues of each book tell a two issue arc. Yeah, we're not going to be getting that. So I don't know. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. And it's, I don't know. Well, and some of these ideas that I raise and things that are in my head, we'll talk about more if we do a State of the Green Lantern.
Yeah, I feel like I've been backtracking a lot this episode, and I'll stop doing that now. So I'm not going to do it again. But I just feel I'm just really trying to drive the point home that I think Philip Kennedy Johnson, the writer, is talented and Montos is talented and everything. It's just like we've said, you know, it's the buzzword of this episode, a choice was made and it didn't pan out well for the readership. And I think that's part of the reason I was very glad you were including the sales information tonight, is because like we're clearly not alone in that fact.
No. And we heard some of the idea is that, oh, you know, they'll appeal to their audience. You know, they have a base of readers, and they'll follow no matter what. And again, some of the big writers, yeah, that's true. But that still doesn't. He appears to be a good writer who is telling a not particularly interesting story, and a story at the very least which was destined never to land with the fan base, because it never was designed to appeal to that fan base. It's really designed to appeal to the people who read his previous stuff, and there's a problem there. And yeah, so yeah, people jumping off this book after the Olfun reveal, yeah, but it made perfect sense. But so that's why it didn't really surprise me that it tanked. I'll be honest with you, I don't necessarily thought I didn't think it was going to drop 60 spots in 1 month. So the next question I have is, April issue that we're talking about now, will the sales stabilize a little bit? And if they do. Will it take another big plunge in May, because May will be the first book that people will come out where people will know this book is ending with issue 12. They actually have an end date to this, not a kind of ambiguous, it might be a year, it might not be a year. We know this book is done, canceled, kaput, it ends. So once we get to May, even if April's numbers are a little better, with a drop down again in May, because anybody who was still hanging on because this story might end and we might move into a different story that I might care about, now realize, well, this whole book is about this one story and it's going to end and I don't give a shit about the story. So I'm jumping off now completely. So that'll be the next thing I'll be curious about, to see if the May sales, regardless of what April's are like, are worse. And because then, and if it's significant, then you could probably say, yeah, a lot of people probably said, okay, we hung in as long as we could on this book, and now we don't like it, and we know it's going to end, so we're done. but we'll see. Unfortunately for us, one way or the other, we are seeing it through to the end. You're welcome, yeah. America.
At least we have, what's that? They keep saying it's not her, but it looks like her. The Tangent Lantern, don't we have that coming later on this year?
Oh yeah, you know what? I almost forgot about that, but yeah, you're right. You're right. It's not the same character, but it does physically resemble.
It looks like her. Yeah. But that's it about this issue. Anything else you want to talk about tonight?
Yeah, I want to do something quick. This will be not to surprise you, but and it won't take much time. And this is the reason why I'm doing it. That considering the crappy percentage of movies we have this year that are going to be really interesting enough to ever do movie episodes and even mini movie episodes, I think I'm going to do a new feature when it fits, when there's something to talk about, and when I only have like 2 minutes to talk about something, that I 2 minutes of material to talk about something. Maybe we'll call it the "What Has Mark Seen" segment. And since I mentioned I was going to go see the first Omen last week. And you know what the ultimate irony in that was, Chad? The stupid Regal Theater did add in a new showing of Ungentlemanly Warfare. It wasn't a second set showing, but they added in a 7:40 like a day or so, maybe like the day before I went to go see The Omen. And I wanted to switch, but my friend Dan didn't want to switch, and I won't let him forget this. But I wanted to switch, but if they had just put that showing in immediately after they canceled the second set one, I never would have seen the first Omen. But the first Omen, it's not very good. It is definitely a streaming-only movie in my perspective. It has two things going for it. It is a prequel to the original 1976 Omen. It has nothing to do with the abortion we got in 2006, which only existed so they could release it on 6606. And it does include, which I think was Jerry Goldsmith's classic Omen music at the appropriate time, kind of like in Saw X when you get the Hello Zep theme. It's kind of earned, so you appreciate it. So I really, and they retcon so much stuff about where and why Damien, where, how, where, where, why and how Damien came from, that I think the whole purpose was just to set up a congruent parallel timeline or storyline so they can kind of continue on if this movie had made money, which it does hasn't. So I don't think we have to worry about it, just to do more sequels that obviously to this movie, but not and do anything that gets in the way of the original Omen trilogy. So that's it. I was really disappointed by it. I kind of knew it was going to suck from the trailer, which is why I didn't want to see it. But sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. And this time, unfortunately, I was right.
And that was Mark's Movie Minute.
That's right. And that's all I have to say about that.
So for you guys at home, no, we don't give a shit about Absolute Power DC. Will we talk about it? Maybe. I guess next week is Free Comic Book Day stuff. So I think the first issue of Absolute Power DC hits for that. I don't know how much of that's going to be teaser or original content or whatever. And then the week after that, something worth mentioning, on the week of May 7th, you will, if you're not already paying attention out there, there is a facsimile edition of Showcase 22 releasing, by the way. For those of you who don't know what facsimile editions are, they are straight up reprints of the original comic books, cover, ads, and all. Small minor changes here and there, like obviously just for legal reasons, they can't put the price at like, you know, 20 cents on the cover. So obviously it's a $5.99 price tag. So that'll be showing on the cover. But otherwise, I think facsimile editions are really good, especially for those of you out there who are trying to complete sets in your long boxes out there. Because if you're like me, look, I have some pretty badass comics over here. Like I've got like the first appearance of Ray Palmer, the Atom. I've got some pretty cool shit, but I still don't think I'm ever going to be able to afford Showcase 22 or All American 16 or any of that stuff anytime soon, if ever. But I think it would be awesome to have a full run of Green Lantern appearances in physical form in my long boxes, right? Well, if you're like me, facsimile editions are for you. So between now and the second week of May, be on the lookout for Showcase 22's facsimile edition. I think that's worth talking about there. And then I don't think we'd get Green Lantern 11 until the week after that, which is like the 14th. So there's that. And then it's the end of May before we have something else, which would be the wrap up to Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. And then our final issue of Alan Scott Green Lantern. So as well as War Journal 9 hits that same day too. So the week of the 22nd is going to be crazy because we have the ending of Justice League versus Kong versus Godzilla, the ending of Alan Scott versus Alan Scott's series, and then the next issue of War Journal all on the same day.
Yeah, and sadly the one that screams out, "Let's push it as far as possible," right now might be War Journal. Alan Scott will want to Alan Scott maybe just to finally get it off the plate completely. And there's a little bit of intrigue is the wrong word. There's a slight interest to see how they try to wrap up the story, which, you know, probably will not have any kind of conclusive ending because given free reign again without just, hey, editorial, there'll be another Alan Scott mini. Poor sales. Poor sales aside, there'll probably be another Alan Scott mini coming soon. Which we probably
he appears on the cover of like issue 12 or whatever for Green Lantern, doesn't he?
Alan?
Yeah, in the main series.
Did he?
Didn't he show up on the solicits?
I think you're thinking the absolute power tie-in. I think you're thinking of, but Alan Scott.
No. I'm sorry, Green Lantern 13. Hal Jordan is the latest casualty of Amanda Waller, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's related to that's related to Alan Scott. It's because it's a tie. It's a tie into Absolute Power.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yes.
Because he's on the cover of Green Lantern 13 with Star Sapphire and Red Lantern Sinestro.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think that's because it's a tie-in. But yeah.
And something Mark is so excited for, the secret origin of Lord Premier Tharos.
Oh, my God. I mean, not to go off on this too much, but ever so briefly, the solicits for the last, like, for the main two books are horrible. I mean, first of all, we know, so Hal, without going into specifics, because I don't want to, people can find the stuff if they want. Hal almost ends up seemingly in the same place that he was when the book started, in a way, being pursued and being on Earth and being depowered. And then you have, and then, yes, we really give a flying F about, I know he's a Durlan, so we might get some tie in that maybe there'll be some payoff to the fact that this is, you know, he appears, this is how he appears now, but that's not, you know, we may recognize him as something else. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I am concerned greatly about the direction of that book, too, because it seems like, much like the Philip Kennedy Johnson book, we know the next few months seemingly aren't going to be moving the goalpost. They will be moving the goalpost, because we're not quite hitting the every time we think we're making progress, it's like the end game just keeps moving further away.
So. Yeah, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the start of this solicit is saying, depowered and back on Earth, Hal needs to find a way to get to the new power battery and recharge. It's issue 13. We just fucking learned about this secret power battery down in Earth, the core, or whether it's the core or just under the crust or whatever, this hidden power battery. And in issue 13, we're already having to have him go back while he's being chased by other people, including whether it's Amanda herself or operatives sent by Amanda Waller. We are at serious risk of revealing this massive pivotal secret for the Green Lantern Corps within a couple of issues of it being revealed in the first place. Can we not keep something a fucking secret ever?
Well, potentially, when you think about it, it also goes back to something we talked about, is the fact that, okay, there's a foundry and there's a central power battery where you can draw power from, but they didn't have any individual power batteries. So I had said, well, what's going to prevent Hal's ring from running out to begin with? Even though that might not be why he's depowered, clearly based on the absolute power stuff, but it was a realistic possibility, no matter what, that he might end up running out of juice. And then how was he going to recharge anyway? Because he's where the hell from the power battery, the central power battery. I don't know. I like Jeremy, and like you said, I'm trying not to let the fact that Jeremy was a cool interview and would like to talk to him again influence my viewing this either. But I'm just saying I'm starting to have some deep concerns about where this book is going, because much like the War Journal book, it seems like it's kind of borderline meandering and kind of two steps forward, one step back. Especially knowing what the Solitzes start coming down the road, even the Carol Ferris thing we talked about, that seems like a complete out of left field tangent based on where this book was going.
It's frustration towards the product, not malice towards the individual.
Well, of course, yes.
Yeah, it's just so everybody out there knows. But speaking of variants, there is a variant for, I'm going to get the variant for 13, because one of the variants, you remember the Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, like, style guides that used to be sent out?
You're right, I remember seeing that cover.
Absolutely getting the style guide cover for sure. And it's a wraparound cardstock, but you're only seeing, oh no. Which of these would be the... Should these would be the front then? It has to be one with a Green Lantern title logo on it. Okay. I'm definitely getting it though. But it's listed as a cover D. If you see a cover and it's listed as like cover A, B, C, D, those are typically not too much more expensive, guys out there. It's maybe like, because it's a cardstock cover, not a regular cover, it's probably like a dollar or two more. It's more, there'll be more expensive variants when you start seeing that it's cover E, 1 in 25, cover F, 1 in 50. Those they start charging buku money for. So if anybody, you see like a regular cover A, regular cover B, whatever, and it's not a limited edition one, and you see it's being double the price or whatever, you're getting ripped off. Don't buy it there. Just FYI. I don't participate too much in the variant game, but when I participated enough to know when I'm getting ripped off, so I figured I'd share that knowledge.
I'm sure it is very greatly appreciated, Chet.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about tonight?
No, I think we've had a pretty varied discussion, so that's kind of cool, considering I was not looking forward to delving into the material, so at least the recording made up for the material.
I guess we don't really have anything necessarily on the docket for next time, so Mark and I will reconvene and figure out what we want to have fun with between now and the next regular issue review.
This is true. So, lanterncast.com, emails lanterncast@gmail.com. Can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GeoCast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, whichever platform you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Also, if you want our Discord information, lanterncast@gmail.com. But if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.